The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. We are in the aftermath of the publication by Candace Owens of the little Telegram chat in which Charlie Kirk had announced that he was leaving the pro-Israel cause. What an interesting development, and a lot of people reacting to it. You know, a lot of people who were expressing doubt about Candace, they look very bad now. Personally, I didn't have to apologize or walk back because I never said Candace is lying. I never said Candace is wrong. What I said then was, well, Candace should come out with the freaking screenshots. Candace keeps talking on her show about videos, and today she's saying on her show, if I die, I gave all of my video hard drives to 8 different people. You won't even know where it comes from. And so it's like, if you have that much video, why don't you show them? I don't know. I don't know why she does this. I believe that I've understood that she kept this evidence of the Telegram channel to wait for October 6th and October 7th to be kind of messing with Israeli propaganda effort. Perhaps that is what motivated her. Perhaps that's why she waited for this week. She called it the Blitzkrieg week. So as I've reviewed yesterday on the show from these messages, we can conclude, okay, Charlie Kirk not only had a change of heart and was abandoning the pro-Israel cause, but at the reveal that information in a Telegram chat, this is what's most important to me. The fact that it wasn't just an internal process that he would speak about with his friends. He said it in a chat where there were potentially people interested in Israeli interest and people, some of the people that would fund him and that would guide him toward a pro-Zionist discourse. So it is in this chat that he has revealed, and this opens up a lot of cui bono possibilities. A lot of people could have known that Charlie Kirk was about to basically rug pull Israel from his career at least, and therefore from his effort in convincing the next generation of Republicans. This opens up a whole can of worms, and people are just starting to dig the surface. And Colvette here on the TPUSA official channel, so they have taken over basically the Charlie Kirk show. And he confirms first that the messages published by Candace Owens are genuine. But it's bizarre, this interaction. It's bizarre, this guy, what he's saying, because he seems like, well, he had those messages. He didn't share them with journalists or the public or with his friends. He shared them with a handful of people that he says, I shared them with people. And among these people would be the government. Let's listen to what he says exactly here.
Charlie was loyal to people that he had shared history with, right? He was asked, I think this may be what you were about to say, Blake, he was asked about Candace before in public, and he would always say, listen, we're friends. He would never say an ill word about her. And if people, you know, tried to force him to do that about Tucker or whatever, he would always be defiant because he didn't want to be morally blackmailed.
Exactly, exactly. Charlie was, he was loyal to people who had ever been friends to him, whether it was very old donors or just people who had worked with Turning Point. Yep. And, you know, as long as they were not attacking him, he would, you know, he would not air any dirty laundry or, frankly, any disagreements he had with people. He did disagree with Candace on the Israel issue. He disagreed with Tucker on the Israel issue.
Well, he disagreed at some point in time, but based on the telegram, it seems like he may have agreed more than we have been given the chance to observe. It seems that he was having a serious change of heart, and I would have loved to see what Charlie Kirk had to say the month after this telegram chat, the year after this telegram chat. We'll never get to know. But do we have here a Charlie Kirk fully revealing what people, fully realizing what people like me have been realizing, which is, oh, okay, there's a whole hidden layer of controllers of the public space. They are agents to fool you. They are agents to misdirect your thoughts and drag your attention here while they do something else here. They're playing for the interest of Israel as it stands in its current government and its current ambitions in the Middle East. And they control politics, they control the media, and they work by threat. And Charlie Kirk had begun realizing that.
But he also recognized Tucker had positions they agreed on. Tucker was a useful voice in the conservative movement on many things. And so he invited him to events, and, you know, they were popular events. Yeah. And so he would react. Sometimes people would just say, yeah, don't invite him, or we're going to, you know, cut off some large donation. And that would make him angry. He would say this, yeah, as you say, this is moral blackmail. And he's this Scottish guy. He's combative. His reaction to that is, you know, you know, the classic, like, screw me. No, screw you. You know, that sort of thing.
He had this, and it's one of my favorite parts about Charlie is just how, like, defiant and independent he was.
Yeah,
he was never going to be.
He could not be controlled by other people.
You could not buy him. He was not bought and paid for. You could not control him with money. It just wasn't the way he was wired. He didn't actually care about money that much.
And so what's going on here? What is going on here? You guys can look up what the text say. What is going on is Charlie, as I mentioned, he loved Israel. He cared about Israel. He cared about the Holy Land. And
okay, these guys, I don't feel them. I feel that they are above their weight class. I feel that they're out of their depth because they're trying to backwardly, they're trying to kind of make excuses. And, oh, no, what you're seeing there here is Scottish defiance. This is a normal behavior. You know, Charlie Kirk was who he was. He had Scottish genetics, very defiant. Fuck me or fuck you. And please understand that he always had respect for the land of Israel. This seems like I'm being put a kind of smoke screen to keep me from understanding what really went on. It seems like I'm being presented kind of a lie. And I don't think these guys, I'm sure they were very close to Charlie, and I'm sure their interest is attached to Charlie, but I think they're out of their depth. They don't understand that you can't just put makeup on this crap. Okay? Charlie had been defiant to Jewish donors 48 hours before dying, and we demand explanations. We will want to know why that happened. But that was just his regular behavior. He was just very, very annoyed by blackmail.
He was aware there was a surge of anti-Israel sentiment on the right. Charlie was thought seriously about this issue and was trying to chart a path forward for people who were sympathetic to Israel. He was playing the good cop here. He was saying, you guys don't realize how bad it could potentially get.
Mm-hmm.
You have to change your PR. That's why he writes a letter to Bibi. You are losing the PR war. You need to change how you...
So now with the relativism of the dates and timestamps, this letter was 6 months before he died. So I'm much more focused on the data that we have from 48 hours before he died than months ago. So the letter now makes sense in the timeline as, well, this was when Charlie Kirk used to believe there was a hope. But 48 hours before dying, Charlie Kirk did not believe there was a hope. Charlie Kirk said, leaving me no choice but to abandon the pro-Israel position. That is much more relevant to the mindset of Charlie at the moment of his death than the letter from months ago.
You do your PR. You need to change your messaging to the American right. You might need to change what you expect from us, that you're not going to be able to count on just, for example, unlimited military aid from America. That's just not going to be tenable going forward. So maybe it has to be a more passive relationship. Maybe you need to give more support towards America. Some more support towards America and, for example, opposing Islamic migration into America. That's one thing he thought we could ally on.
Again, these guys are so out of their depth. The relationship between the U.S. and Israel does not matter in terms of, oh, we give a little aid. The aid is that little. The problem is we have infiltration within the country of people who are acting on behalf of Israel and who don't have to reveal it because Israel is given a special treatment as a foreign entity. And you have basically what Nick Fuentes describes as a fifth column, a kind of ethnic mafia operating within the U.S. and subverting the processes of politics and information sharing of the American people. That is grave. And the question of how many billions and does Egypt aid count as Israel aid, that we can all solve this very quick at the end. But we can solve it as long as we don't even have the tool of free sovereign politics. Ked's Dead on their YouTube chat says, Jeff, I dislike that people say this proved Nick Fuentes wrong. I disagree. What do you think? Well, Nick Fuentes, see, there's been a little difference between me and Nick Fuentes. There's been a little difference in how we have treated the question of the involvement of Israel in the death of Charlie Kirk. Nick Fuentes went a little too strong to my taste. My position has always been it's very interesting to study the possibility of an Israeli involvement. I want facts. And that's been my position at all times. Nick Fuentes said, unless something comes out, I don't believe Israel is involved in the killing right now. Now, it's a small difference. And yes, David Smith says, the difference is JF and Simonette's woman. That is correct. That is true. That is another difference between me and Nick Fuentes. But see, I understand that people would go at Nick Fuentes and be kind of, well, this proves you're wrong. Although they're not correct either. The messages don't prove Nick Fuentes wrong. But I understand that people are triggered by the exact position of Nick Fuentes, which is just a millimeter away from mine. But it makes a lot of difference. What would have been the most open-minded approach for Nick Fuentes would have been to say, I don't believe for now that Israel is involved. I would like to have more facts, and I would like to investigate if they are. Nick Fuentes kind of closed the door very quick, which, I mean, still as of today, he's not proven wrong. He's not proven wrong, but given the so many circumstantial evidence that say, hey, there's something very weird here happening, it's natural that there's a bunch of the population that want to side with Candace and they will pour over Nick for having closed the door a little too quick to still a plausible hypothesis. Aim says, I remember seeing a video of Nick streaming with a guy years ago, eating at a restaurant and having the look of love in his eyes. Oh, yeah, you're talking about the cat boy moment. I did a lot of jokes around this. Of course, it was at a time where I was more in a conflict with Nick Fuentes. These days, of course, we have forgiven each other and we love each other. Eric is sending a super chat.
What are the key evolutionary pressures likely to influence male and female differentiation over the next 10 generations, and how might these pressures vary across human ethnic groups?
Over the next 10 generations, and how might these pressures vary across human ethnic groups? So I believe that there is a strong division in modern societies between city life and edge of civilization living. So I believe that's already a big distinction factor, where you have people living the rural lifestyle and they live a different mode of life. Whereas the city people are, you know, they're all addicted to social contagion. You can see it in the way they've handled COVID. Whereas in rural area, COVID people were, you know, the COVID stuff was taken lightly. In the city, the COVID stuff was fully controlled by, you know, social contagious woman who spread beliefs and who want to adhere to the rules of the state and etc. So I believe that one of the big split, the difference between the city and the rural life will lead to different male and female relationships. I believe that basically the beta males will be headed toward the cities. They will enter the whole social pressure, social testing patterns of women in their couple. They will be tested for leftism. They will be tested by women in courtship for liberal talking points and stuff. So you're going to have a big betaization of the male in the city and alphaization of the male in the rural world. Basically, cities are becoming the empires of female-controlled human politics, and the rural world will be the only place where some form of masculinity will survive. Some of the other pressures will relate to, you know, the whole internet and Instagram thoughts and, you know, the whole phenomenon of females and their interaction with internet celebrity or porn or use of their bodies for anything in the continuum of prostitution. So will this be punished or will this be rewarded evolutionarily? I believe some of it will be punished because I believe it is sterilizing behaviors. It is women losing time instead of building a family doing this kind of crap. So one of the big distinction between over male and females in terms of evolution is the females have been given with the internet a tool for using their sex, which the males haven't quite been given. So males have to engage with the internet in either, like me, an intellectual manner or gaming. But the internet gives something very unique to women. And what they do with it will probably be evolutionarily punitive. And the beta males that are funding this sex work on the internet, they will be punished too, because they're spending their resources on false signals of sex. Then your question, does it vary across ethnic groups? I do believe it does. Because if you're so dependent on the state that you can't acquire property or you don't own your house, like you have in impoverished minority populations, then the rural world isn't really accessible to you. And so you have a racial effect of white flight toward the rural areas, and that will have a racial component to it. I also believe that the whole Instagram sex work phenomenon also has a component of it with respect to the internet pressure. And it's not the same thing for a white female or a black female to become an Instagram tot. The the size of the ass is very different to begin with, and then the extent of the reach and the broadness of the career is also extremely different. Ames says, I don't personally care if Nick isn't heterosexual, but it might explain why he apparently hasn't had a girlfriend or relationship at his age. Well, I don't think that that's indicative of anything, because Nick clearly is a man who went on a path of self-sacrifice for intellectual work. And he's in a good position. He has enough money that he could now get any woman. And so I think it's going to come. But I understand him to be avoidant and careful, because look at me, for example. I took a totally different path in life. I just fucked everything that moves. Now, that was my personality. My personality was calling me to immediate insemination at all times. Now, there's a price to pay. I've had very unreliable women. They've betrayed me. They took my kids. They renamed my kids against my will. I've been betrayed severely, and I've paid a huge price in terms of health. My body just being constantly worried about these fucking women. But this is the path I've taken. Now, I would understand that Nick doesn't want to take this path, that he thinks he can be careful enough to have a woman who will not betray him. And if he's right about this, if he actually finds a woman who will remain, loyal to him, then good for him. You know, he should take that time to do his choice right. Go away, says, I tried moving rural based on JF's advice, lost my rural job, and gossip spread around the town that I was lazy, couldn't get another job, had to move back to the city. Thanks, JF. Well, I think you're bullshitting, because go away, I remember, like, all shows I make, you keep saying that it corresponds to your life. Like if I was to make a show about astronauts in the International Space Station, you would be like, I've been on the space station with my friend who's an astronaut. You are a bullshitter. You keep lying on the regular chat to drag my attention. And yeah, I don't believe that this actually happened to you. Tyler Siriani says, how did you keep these women from stealing all your wealth? Canada is a bitch in common law courts. Quite simple, Bitcoin. Bitcoin, Bitcoin, Bitcoin. And don't give a woman any dollar that you don't consider she's going to steal from you. Anything that she has access to, she will steal from you. So Bitcoin, multiple addresses, multiple wallets, multiple metal plates, multiple, multiple, multiple. You need to have 20 times more wallets than the number of women who will betray you in your life. And so if you expect to be betrayed by 15 women, you need about 120 Bitcoin wallets.
And he was trying to do all of this because he cared about the relationship and wanted to chart a way forward on it. And he would feel angry and upset when people would react to this by blowing up and suggesting he was an anti-Semite or a hater. He would get angry about that because he knew it was untrue. And then he would sometimes vent about this.
Yeah.
He would vent about this to people who understood that, who are pro-Israel people, who shared his view on that issue.
Well, exactly. And just why I, you know, didn't share this publicly, it was because this was a private message between Charlie and some people, some Jews and non-Jews, where he was.
Some Jews and non-Jews.
You know, frustrated. He was frustrated. And that would have felt like a betrayal to my friend, because he never said anything like that publicly in like a show, right? He said things with Megan that were very, like, we just played them. I went on Alex Clark's show and I felt.
Now, what I note is he was saying this in a discussion group with pushback. He wasn't saying this to Christians, saying, hey, look, those Jews are harassing me. I'm going to leave their cause. He was literally saying in the group chat to Jews and Jewish donors and Jewish donor-tied people like Josh Hammer. He was saying, I'm leaving your cause. And when he said, you know what, I'm thinking about inviting Candace because you guys have provoked me to the end of it. You guys have pushed me to the border. I'm thinking about doing even worse than Tucker. I'm thinking Candace. And the answer was, UGH, don't invite Candace. So yeah, definitely Charlie Kirk was under threat. And today, Candace is now adding to her already impressive stack of claims. She claims that there is written evidence that Charlie was convinced he was going to be killed.
Of truth tellers in this moment, okay? There is an underground movement of knights all around the world, from mom sleuths to government employees, like he said, to personal assistants, to Turning Point USA donors, who are working together to bring justice to Charlie because we don't like the way this feels. We just like the way it feels. The vibes are off. I will respect, even though obviously that statement was prepared, I will respect the fact that Andrew says what Charlie would have said. And for the first time, I feel that's been expressed that we have to let free speech be our North Star. And I'm not so sure that the people, some of the people that are donating to Turning Point USA believe that.
Well, definitely not. They were all over Charlie, not for inviting JF, for inviting Tucker. Tucker was too anti-Semitic for them.
In fact, I'm certain some of them don't believe that. Obviously, we wouldn't have that text message if they all believed that. And that is what I think has been so frustrating, is that it seems as though the executives would rather, and I'm now referring to Tyler Boyer, impugn the character of the people who are doing exactly what Charlie Kirk would have done. So please, Andrew, make sure that Tyler Boyer and Alex Clark get the internal memo about free speech. I want to say one more thing rather explosively.
So that's where she will drop her biggest claim of the day.
Three people told me off record, two people who have this in a written communication from Charlie, one who is a Turning Point USA donor, and I would say very much one of the white knights in this. The very day before Charlie Kirk died, he expressed that he thought he was going to be killed. He told these people, I think they're going to kill me. Okay. He did not express that to me. So I am telling you this based off the testimony of three people. And I am saying this because I hope that these people who I think are good will be inspired to come forward with that. Now, again, those conversations I had were off record. I honor that. If I say it's off record, it stays off record. But I'm hoping that watching what I am doing and feeling the energy that is rising across the world for people who want to know what the heck happened on 9/10, that, you know, they will be brave and they will say, yeah, Charlie did the day before he died think that he was going to be killed, and maybe tell us, who is they? Well, for once and for all, who is they? Who is the they that he thought were going to kill him? Now, to give the obvious answer to federal informant Nick Fuentes' question, the reason that I waited to...
What is this line she goes with? Nick Fuentes, federal informant. How cheap. How ridiculous.
To reveal the text messages is because I'm not a child. Okay. Like I said, I have a lot more. I'm not an idiot. And I have.
Well, it's not childish to be demanding evidence. It's journalistic standard. We can't believe what anyone says about discussions that they don't show us. That is fundamental because you may be misled, you may misunderstand. The screenshot is always the criterion to begin a claim that something is real and to begin the opportunity for the public to examine for themselves and interpret for themselves the words. it was so how does she frame Nick Fuentes is a federal informant, and I haven't released those evidence before because I'm not a child. What adults wait? They wait before they release evidence. Hyborian Age says, long time no CJF, great to see you back. I've always been here. I was just on Rumble. I'm still on Rumble, but I'm now multi-streaming on YouTube. Go Away says, he probably meant they/them were going to kill him. And this is essentially what happened in the official narrative. indeed, he ended up being killed by gender non-conforming people. So there's always some good in a Candace Owens show, but it's also populated with such bad practices and decredibilization. It's just alarming that the whole world is hanging on to this unstable psycho bitch. Because look, she's had a dream now.
Like I just said, had a vivid dream this weekend, and Charlie came to me and he told me that he was betrayed. And so for me,
that's the dark age. That's the dark age where you have someone who's doing journalism and also sharing her dreams in which she speaks with dead people.
You don't have to believe that, but I do believe that. And it was the immediate sense I got, actually. And I don't know who exactly it is that betrayed him, but I also felt in the dream that it is soon going to be revealed, that it's actually inevitable that it is going to be revealed, that there is nothing and no one that is going to stop the truth from coming out, and it is going to have international consequences. Take that to the bank. Quote me on that.
So you have Angel Charlie Kirk coming to her in a dream, and somehow Angel Charlie Kirk is aware that there will be, first, that he was betrayed. So Charlie Kirk knows who killed him. It will be revealed, but also there will be international political consequences. That is an amazing claim. Plapidas says, JF, maybe Charlie's ghost is walking the netherworld, just like the Patrick Swayze movie Ghost, and Candace is his psychic channeler. I'm sculpting a pot here like in the classical ghost scene. Jen X says she constantly speaks of vibes and feelings. The regular chat has no use for such woman. Okay, strong positioning from the regular chat. But yeah, it's worrying. It's worrying to me that the standards have become so low in this race for... I mean, what's happening right now with the internet media is what happened with the American TV media. It just became more and more shitty until the shittiness was kind of a tradition and feature of it, you know? Jerry Springer was kind of evolved the shit. It was shit that was at such a bottom of society that it became interesting. But we are in the same process. We are in a process where we turn to the most sensational claim, and she doesn't even have to provide the written proof for it for people to get excited. That is a very sad thing. But yeah, I would like to have those texts that apparently would indicate Charlie Kirk was afraid and thought that he would be killed. That is very important when you think about it. Even from a police standpoint, the police should be given this. And then there's this bizarre guy in this whole story, Josh Hammer, which is raising massive red flags because he's appearing out there, and Candace is right. You know, he has been appearing, pushing pro-Israeli discourse, and he's been lying. He's been lying as part of his representation of Charlie's opinions. The way he's been lying is that he was in that Telegram chat. But he goes out there and he talks about Charlie Kirk's letter from months before. But he never revealed that he was in that Telegram chat. And he never revealed that in that Telegram chat, Charlie Kirk was very clear that he was leaving the pro-Israel cause. Pruitt sends a link through Super Chat. Thank you for your donation. Now, The Ballad of JF. I will listen to this later, maybe, but I don't listen to parodic voices or art that is done in my name or about me. I don't listen to that kind of thing. So there's this bizarre guy, Josh Hammer, who dug. So he's had very suspicious behavior on September 9th and September 10th. Not only this, but he's been lying publicly after the death of Charlie about the real state of affair in Charlie's mind regarding Israel. So he was on the Telegram group, so he knew that Charlie had changed his mind. Now, 24 hours after Charlie says on the Telegram group, I'm left with no choice but to leave the pro-Israel cause. Josh Hammer goes on Twitter, and that night he is speaking with Charlie Kirk on the phone, based on his own admission. He is speaking to Charlie Kirk, and he says, Charlie Kirk has always been pro-Israel, and we're joking, and we're talking about how he's going to talk about my book about Israel. So he was on the phone with Josh Hammer, with Charlie Kirk. And on that very night, he writes, based to a 12-year-old tweet by Donald Trump, which stated, should be public execution for all to see. You will end this bullshit fast. How is it that a man who is so dedicated to the Israeli cause, who is on the phone with Charlie Kirk, who knows that Charlie Kirk is having a change of heart about the Israel cause, why is it that he digs a 12-year-old tweet by Donald Trump about public executions? And that is 24 hours before Charlie Kirk would be publicly executed. And this is the guy who has been saying very pro-Israel things before. Jew hatred is inherent in the European DNA. Europe will never change. Jew hatred is inherent in its collective DNA. I am Jewish, proudly. I advocate every single day of my life for the Jewish people and for the Jewish state of Israel. Now, this guy, also on the day of Charlie Kirk being killed, so 24 hours before Charlie Kirk gets killed, he says, based on the idea of having public executions, the moment Charlie Kirk gets killed, that day, he says, public execution. That's very bizarre. He said, based on September 9th, he said, based to public execution called by Trump from 12 years ago. On the day Charlie Kirk gets executed, he says, public execution. Reframing the exact wording that Donald Trump had used in his tweet from 12 years ago. Is this Josh Hammer bragging about the fact that he knew it was going to happen? Is this Josh Hammer thinking that it should have happened? Is it him celebrating, oh, based, we're going to have public political execution. Oh, here's the political execution. Here's the public execution I was talking about yesterday. What is going on in Josh Hammer's head, who was in a telegram? So let's redo the timeline here. On September 8th, he's in a telegram group in which Charlie Kirk is saying, I'm abandoning the pro-Israel cause. On September 9th, he's on the phone with Charlie Kirk trying to convince him to keep the Israel cause in and please promote my book and we love you. Stay with the Jews, please. And then during this phone conversation or in the hours surrounding it, because he says, I was on the phone with him at night, in the evening. And it's at 6:05 p.m. that he states based. So on September 9th, he's saying based to the idea of public executions. Was it out of frustration from his conversation with Charlie Kirk? Was it in expectation with the conversation of Charlie Kirk? And was the conversation with Josh Hammer exactly what led Charlie Kirk to be convinced that he was about to get killed? Were the threats coming from Josh Hammer? Because if I'm on the phone with a guy and I'm a public personality, one very common thing you can do is refresh their Twitter account. If I was Charlie Kirk on the phone with Josh Hammer and I'm like refreshing his account and I see, oh shit, he's talking to me about how I should stay within the Israeli fold, and he's saying base to a public execution. Is it possible that Josh Hammer and his use of Twitter combined with phone communications with Charlie is one of the factors that led Charlie Kirk to believe he was going to get killed? Interesting possibility. And then September 10th, on the moment where Charlie Kirk gets executed, Josh Hammer tweets public execution, as if he was descriptively announcing, this is what I was talking about yesterday. As if he was saying, I knew that this was going to happen, and this is the exact words I used yesterday, public execution. Now, you can have an explanation in which Josh Hammer on September 9th wasn't even bringing up the idea of public execution for Charlie Kirk. He was bringing it for Irina. And he was just doing a tweet like this, a pro-Irina tweet, suddenly calling for public execution. And the next day, when he used the word public execution, it was only in a mindset of calling for the public execution of whoever killed Charlie. Or it was perhaps saying that Charlie had been publicly executed. So it's not like these tweets are necessarily incriminating in and of themselves, but I'm wondering to what extent are we being gaslit here? To what extent is Josh Hammer playing with the public? Because he certainly then went on podcast and lied. So he certainly lied about the state of mind of Charlie. Because he was on podcast saying constantly from 2 days after his death to today, he was out there contradicting the story of Candace Owens and saying, to my knowledge, Charlie Kirk has always been a friend of Israel. In fact, I talked to him the night before. We were still joking around about my book. But he hid the fact that he had access to the Charlie Kirk text on Telegram. And so if he's capable of lying, is he also capable of gaslighting and of playing a game here with the public, saying, kind of leaving a trace that he knew this was going to happen? And that may mean that it would happen under his order, but it could also just mean that he knew it would happen because he's well connected within a set of interests that wanted Charlie Kirk dead. John Drake says, how could any agent, government or otherwise, set up a fall guy in a couple of days and pull this off? Is straight up mind control possible? How else to explain this besides wild coincidence? Well, you know, Tyler Robinson, there's no evidence that he has been preparing for any long amount of time. In fact, asked by Lance Twiggs, for how long have you prepared this? He answered, approximately a week. Now, are we therefore to reject the idea that those messages matter? Because Tyler Robinson would have been in preparation for a week. I will say words of caution on this line of thinking. Sometimes I feel that 2-3 days feel like a week. So especially if I work on something very hard, I could work on it for 2 or 3 days. And if you were to ask me, when did you start working on this? I might answer 1 week, but the reality might be 2 days or 3 days. So keep in mind, people don't necessarily have especially on stress, they don't necessarily have a clear recollection of times. And the fact that Tyler Robinson said, I've been planning this for about a week, could very well mean that he was doing it for about 48 hours. And in addition, you cannot exclude the possibility that Tyler Robinson could have been approached a week ago without certainty of moving on with a killing plan. And then that certainty may have been confirmed 48 hours or 24 hours before the events actually happened. So it's not necessary. There's no contradiction in the timelines necessarily if you take into account these two possibilities. Cat Lady the Genocide says it's not a difficult shot, so any prep is him likely scouting the location and things like that. Wahhead Rex says all the loose ends tied in a bow. Military can train a marksman in 3 weeks. Well, I don't think Tyler Robinson needed to be trained on the marksman aspect. If he needed any sort of involvement, it was merely the signal that he had to do it, or that he would get paid something to do it, something like that. But I don't think he needed anything, since he relied on his grandpa's rifle, and he appears to have been planning the whole escape and setting up himself. The Jack Acid says, I don't think Tyler even fired the fatal shot. Well, to me, that's not a productive angle, because we wouldn't know if that was the case. We wouldn't know from the rifle, the bullet, the rifling around the bullet. There will be bullet studies. There will be rifling studies of the particular characteristics of this cannon. So I wouldn't think about this right now, because there's no reason to think about this, and it's not a productive line of research. I trust that if Tyler Robinson is in jail, it's because the police has ample evidence that they will eventually reveal, that will confirm that it's him that shot. The questions are, why does there seem to be so much pre-knowledge of this murder? Why did we have social media channels saying something's big is going to happen to tomorrow? Why do we have Josh Hammer playing games with the word public execution? Why do we have Josh Hammer lying? Why do we have these internal secret discussions being dripped so slow to the public about the state of mind of Charlie as he was about to get killed? Light Guru says Grok Wiki will fall flat on its face. Well, let's talk about it, since it was my intended main subject tonight. I believe that we are headed toward a very interesting event next week. where Gruckypedia will be published. And to me, it's an occasion for the revolutionary phenotype to shine. Because I've always been faced with a problem, which is I have this scientific theory that is valid to explain the emergence of life, to explain the emergence of genetic layers, to explain the tree of relationships between viruses. And yet, I've not been taken seriously, and people have been ignoring me. And they've used all sorts of excuses across the years. Before the Mama JF story, it was, oh, well, JF is an abuser. Oh, JF is self-promoter. JF is self-editing. And then eventually it became JF is a murderer. And you end up having a problem, which is that the world is being deprived of an actual valid theory of biology just because of cancel culture. And I believe that the coming out of Gruckypedia will give us an opportunity to engage with this AI. If it just repeats the lies about me on Wikipedia, then we're going to be able to go and engage with Gruckypedia and say, hey, this needs review. This is not true. This is not true. And eventually we can get Gruckypedia to perhaps accept that my theory is true the way I got Gruck to accept that my theory was true. So I don't know if it will be truthful from the beginning. Of course, it will be highly influenced by the lies of Wikipedia and the lies of the mainstream media. But eventually what I found with Gruck is that Gruck is reasonable and willing to get corrected. And that down the line, if you push it and you say, no, that's false, no, you're wrong here, no, you're wrong here, eventually it accepts that, okay, this idea that the phenotype can become a gene and that the gene can become a phenotype, that is a new idea. And it does explain the evolution of life on Earth as it stands. John Drake says, yes, let's get a proper page on TRP. Eretz Israel says, how do you know your theory is valid, though? Have you asked Gruck to check it? Well, I know that my theory is valid without having to ask Gruck. A theory is valid by the validity of its predictions and its internal consistency and external consistency mapping out with the truth and observations. So my theory comes out from first principles to begin with. It is naturally expanding from the first principles of the theory of evolution and natural selection. So from that point of view, it must be true. It stems from just pure mathematical extrapolations of what must be true during evolution. Now, if you make it collide with empiricism and then you ask, well, did that happen on planet Earth? Because it's one thing to come up with an internally consistent theory that is true internally, and then it's another thing to test it with the world. Well, the prediction of the theory of phenotypic revolutions is that layers of genetic code will be retained after a phenotypic revolution. And what do we see in our life forms? The layers have been retained. And in fact, all of the features, not just the layers, but the RNA viruses, for example, have been retained. So the past life form that gave birth to our life form have been retained. They still exist independently. The transfer of RNA to DNA and formation still exists independently in the form of the retrotranscribed viruses. So you have all of the pieces that are indicative that my theory is true, that we had to go through a phase where proteins dominated and then RNA dominated and then DNA dominated with exchanges of information between the three layers, that the dogma of biology had to be reversed. And the ultimate proof of my theory is the fact that there are genetic layers in our life form. And we don't have primitive ancestors or primitive life forms on Earth that don't have these layers. They all have it, or they are a sublayer. They all have it, or they are the layer below. See, there's no DNA-based life that doesn't use proteins. There's no DNA-based life that doesn't use RNA. If you had these possibilities, then everything would be on the table in terms of how we got there. But you don't have these possibilities because there was an order to the process. The order is the sequence of phenotypic revolutions that happened from proteins to DNA. Tyler Siriani says, do you know the average rate of mutations? I mean, I got some numbers on this when I did the whole calculation for Vox. But of course, I would have to check them again, and they vary across various life forms. Sneed for Life says, is your book different to The Selfish Gene by Richard Dawkins? Well, my book is the completion of The Selfish Gene. I said it's like a unauthorized sequel. I say in that book, I say it, Richard Dawkins and The Selfish Gene demonstrates 99.9% of what happens in life. It's valid for 99.999% of the events in any life form. The theory of phenotypic revolution is about the 0.001% remaining. So, I explained that history on Twitter. Since 2015, I deployed efforts to actively self-cancel. I couldn't bear the weight of social pressure and living a life to please others. I had also realized that the social system behind cancel culture had to be dismantled because it impeded on our search for the truth. When mainstream media contacted me to write hit pieces about me, I answered in ways that would ensure more coverage, even more virality. I answered in ways that I knew would tempt them to lie even harder about me. And I did all of this because I knew that there would be, no matter how much lies were told, that there would be at some point someone rewriting Wikipedia and realizing, wait, this guy is right. Someone would read my book at some point and say, wait, this is a correct theory. And I didn't know it would happen that fast. I thought maybe it's going to happen in 100 years, maybe in 1,000 years. But I think it might happen next week, actually. And that guy may be Grok, may not be a human being. So I said, little did I know it would all happen much faster than I could dream of. Next week, Elon will be releasing Grokipedia, which will be a first complete re-edition of Wikipedia untainted by the greedy liberal technocrats that currently control Wikipedia edits. This technocracy ensures that only the official narrative makes it in, as it gives complete control to mainstream media with what they call the notability criteria. Which in essence means that if mainstream journalists don't report on you, you don't exist. It will have taken artificial intelligence to realize that a correct theory of biology led in the pile of social shit produced by humans under layers of slanted, derisive media coverage. Rather than engage with the theory of phenotypic revolutions published 7 years ago, most human biologists have decided to remain silent, letting the press write it jobs about me, characterizing me as abuser, rapist, or even murderer at times. All unfounded claims. I hope that Grokipedia is the beginning of the fall for the academia as it stands. We need to replace the social processes of grant-related social networking, hiring, and peer review by one that is less corruptible and more truth-oriented. One that doesn't fall for the loose criteria of reputationally harmful lies regularly shared in the media. I think Grokipedia will be more than just an objective rewrite of some encyclopedia. It will show us how obsolete humanity is in the search for truth. It will enact a standard by which humanity can and should be judged for its epistemological sins. Someday next week, it will be Judgment Day. I believe that we may be headed toward being shown the way by Grokipedia, and Grokipedia eventually becoming strong enough in the search for truth that no one would think of going anywhere else than asking it about the truth. And I think it's going to give us a lesson in the search for truth that the Wikipedia bureaucrats have been unable to learn. They've been unable to develop a genuine truth-seeking method. And instead, they had to trust the journalists and trust the COVID experts. And they got absolutely fooled on so much by people who want to buy the truth, because that's what journalism is. The mainstream media and all, it's all a bunch of billionaires trying to buy what the truth is. And Wikipedia, by saying we're just going to trust these guys and people like JF don't exist, they've missed on so much. And they've missed on a theory here that actually predicts the end of the world and the end of human civilization. They missed on one of the greatest dangers that's hanging over our heads. We are about to engage in genetic modification. I've been banned for saying it because somehow the YouTube algorithm detected this as some offense to the RNA science of COVID at the time. I've been censored. I've had my videos stricken. And yet it is true. We are being under genetic... did we lose audio? Hello? No, I think you should have the audio. We are under a genetic attack. And it starts with vaccines. It starts with, there's this little special disease that we can cure if you can just play with your genes. And eventually down the line, we are engaged in self-farming. We are engaged in creating a library of how to make human puppets to a centrally controlled, AI-guided queen. Atem Ben Abdallah says, can civilizations handle the truth without collapsing? It's a good question. The truth may be too hard for certain civilizations, especially when you have civilizations that have dogmas. And for example, the big dogma of liberal civilization is anyone can become anything. It's all inside of you. You can be an astronaut. You can be a nuclear physicist. Anyone has a chance to become anything. And the reality is, no, that's not how it works. It's not how it works physiologically, biologically, economically. There's all sorts of scales that make it so that most people can't be astronauts. Guy Slapkins says, Jeff, why didn't bacteria get displaced by sexual single-cell organisms if sex gives such an evolutionary advantage? Well, I don't know if we must frame the ultimate advantage of sex as being an evolutionary advantage. What I've said very often is, and this is from, there are scientific articles, it's kind of a mainstream view in biology, that what sex does is it speeds up evolution. Now, notice something. Speeding up evolution does not necessarily constitute an advantage if you have no destination. See, that's the key. So the bacteria, the reason bacteria didn't need sex is probably that at their degree of complexity, they're pretty much optimized machines by any criteria that may matter to life. Bacteria probably wouldn't gain much from a bigger genome. They probably have figured out their machinery that makes them optimal at their size, at their ecological niche. Now, there are things that sex will be needed for. There are things that sex is good at. And some of these things are, for example, growing yourself into a moose. You need sex for this because the moose is majestic, elegant, and you won't ever get a moose if you just try to survive. The moose is a sign that there was a female wanting that form of moose. And the peacock is a sign that there was a certain way to be a peacock that was charming enough for the female to pass. Well, to smash the peacock. So the reason bacteria didn't need this is bacteria are optimized beings of life as filter agents at the bottom of the size scale of life. Now, probably at this place, there isn't anywhere that sex could bring you. However, note that there are places that sex brought single-cell organisms, and those are single-cell eukaryotes. So single-cell eukaryotes are an example that actually sex, meiotic recombination will happen to bacteria-like single-cell organisms. So where were these things brought? Well, they were brought to form filaments and communities of yeast and eventually mushroom. They were formed to bring, for example, the mushroom world is filled with bizarre lifestyles of being in a haploid state at certain times of life and a diploid state at other times of life. So you can have a haploid spread under the forest. It's never going to lead to a mushroom, but it's haploids. It's the cells that would be sperm and eggs, but instead they form a kind of mycelium and they colonize the forest as sperm and egg, making copies of themselves as sperm and egg. And then eventually they give birth to a mushroom and they make this mushroom be part of the diploid cycle. So the cells of the mushroom are now living in a diploid way, in the way that the cells in your body function. So not in a sperm and egg way, but in a more like skin cell, muscle cell type of way. So all of this to say, sex starts to matter at higher levels of complexity, higher levels of organization. The reason bacteria didn't need sex is probably precisely because of this. They had already achieved the optimality in their niche, and sex couldn't bring them further. But sex did bring them further when it became radical changes of niche, and when it didn't become, I'm just a little single-cell organism filtering the water, taking what I can get. I'm now a moose, I'm now a mushroom, I'm now a filament of whatever plant or plant-like microscopic organism. Sex mattered then. AIM says, bacteria can exchange genetic information with one another through a sex pilus. Yes, but that is non-meiotic transfer, and it's fundamentally different. When I say sex, I talk about specifically meiosis, which is not only the exchange of genes, because viruses will exchange genes too. Viruses, plasmids, free circulation of DNA within bacteria populations. The transfer isn't what sex is. All of these mechanisms that I just listed, they're all transfers. But sex is the fair splitting of a diploid genome into haploid cells for the recombination into a diploid genome cell. And that fair split between the male and the female, between the sperm and the egg, that is sex.